Jabber, jabber, jabber. It's the sound of people talking about other people. Gossiping around the water cooler is an age-old tradition, but is it really okay? I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll tell you more in just a moment.
Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Gossip is more than idle talk. A study by Northeastern University proves that negative chit-chat actually changes the way we view the person who's defamed. Volunteers viewed images of neutral human faces paired with negative, positive, or neutral gossip. When shown an image associated with negative comments like "she stole money," volunteers spent much more time studying the person's face than they did the other faces. Researchers believe the change in visual perception of people associated with negative gossip is a protective mechanism. It helps us steer clear of people with a reputation for lying, cheating, and harming others. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for StartMail, private email you can trust.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them as they march into the palaces of the high and mighty. I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, happy Monday. Welcome to a new week. Dr. Catherine Albrecht here, keeping you up to date on the topics that it seems like a lot of people aren't really talking about these topics. The one I want to address today... Headline. Are you ready for this? If you've been listening to my show for any length of time, you are no doubt aware that I'm a big opponent of organ transplants, especially heart transplants, because the heart really is, contrary to what the psychologists or the physiologists or the secular modern medicine people would tell you, the heart really is the seat of who you are. It's the seat of your emotions. The ancients certainly have known that from the beginning. And if you remove your heart, if you get a heart transplant, you take your own heart out and put someone else's heart in, you actually wind up becoming a different person. It's not just our brains. We are more than just computer programs running in our brains. We are complete packages, and the heart is critical. Now, as far as other organs go, there is, I've talked before about the transplants or the surgery, about gastrointestinal bypass surgeries, where they removed a portion of a person's colon, and they've found huge personality changes in those people, oftentimes resulting or frequently resulting in relationship problems. We just know I've done a lot of shows on this, and we just know that when we start messing around with the parts of the human body and replacing this and that as though we were just brains, consciousness carried around in a machine, that it doesn't really matter if you replace the parts, that that really doesn't work because there's a lot of spirit going on. All right, so here's the story for today. This is awful. Pig lung transplanted into a human for the first time. Now, the closest the closest match that we can get from a biological perspective from for a transplant to a human being, obviously the closest would be an actual other human being. And the second closest is the pig. There are laboratories, we've talked about them before, where they are raising transgenic pigs, pigs that have been genetically modified and turned into little baby piglet fetuses and then raised in these special biogenetic pig farms for transplantation purposes. And we know that they have transplanted certain parts of a pig. They've actually done heart transplants from a pig into a person. This is the first time that they've done a lung transplant into a person. And if you know anything at all about what changes happen to people when they get transplants, I mean, they wind up with, you could get somebody's heart who was a big fan of junk food, and then suddenly you'd find yourself eating junk food, even if you'd been a nutritional purist all your life. Or you could find, I think, one woman who was in her 50s and had a lot of health problems, obviously, because if you need a heart transplant, you have health problems. She got the heart of a man in his early 20s, late teens, who was a daredevil. That's how he died, because he was racing on his motorcycle. And with that heart in her body, she felt like she was just being whipped around to and fro and forced to go on all these trips that were very out of character for her. She was kind of a stay-at-home person, and her mind and her heart would be pretty much at war. Her mind was her own mind, and her heart was this young man's heart, and he wanted to travel. He wanted to get out on it, you know, go out and see on the open road, ride a motorcycle. She was like, you know, I'm a lady in my 50s. I don't want to be doing that. And yet the heart dragged her around to do it. So if you had a pig heart in you, can you only imagine if you had the desires, if you were actually driven by the desires that drive pigs? It's just horrifying. I mean, pigs are known for being, they're known for being slothful and filthy and desiring yucky stuff. And there's a reason why, we call people pigs. It's kind of an insult to call somebody a pig, obviously. And many of the world's religions believe that pig food, pig meat, at least the Muslims and the Jews, is completely unclean and filthy because of how pigs are. They view them as unclean. So having this in your body, I think, would be bad enough. Having it as your heart would be horrifying. And I'm just trying to think through the implications of what it would mean to have a pig lung inside of you. You know, what role does the, spiritually speaking, what role do the lungs play? Let me share the story here. A pig lung has been transplanted into a human for the first time in an experiment that opens the door for organs on demand. Chinese scientists successfully inserted a genetically engineered pig lung into a brain-dead 38-year-old male who had suffered a brain hemorrhage. In previous experiments, pig hearts, livers, and kidneys have been transplanted into humans, and that process is called xenotransplantation, xeno meaning across species. But the lungs are more delicate, and it was feared an animal organ would be immediately rejected. Scientists said the pig lung maintained viability and functionality for 9 days in the man's body without major rejection or infection. Now, this story is kind of disgusting on multiple levels. The brain-dead male who suffered the brain hemorrhage was, rather than being allowed to die, to just pass away naturally and, just end his life and, you know, be released from this broken mortal coil that he was stuck in. Instead, they used his body. I mean, this was done in China. I don't even know if this would be considered ethical or legal here in the U.S., but they used his body as an experimental guinea pig. They wanted to figure out, let's see what we can get away with. Let's see how the human body responds to us doing various things to it. And let's just use his body. After all, he's brain dead, so he doesn't need, you know, who cares what we do with his body? Let's cut it open. Let's stick in some pig organs, regardless of the fact that his lungs were perfectly functioning. They're like, let's cut out his perfectly functional lungs and put in pig lungs, and then just kind of sit back and see how long it takes him to die. I mean, the ethics of this, the ethics of using, you know, brain dead, quote unquote, and I put that in big air quotes because I actually struggle with the definition of brain death, as do many people who are looking ethically at the problems with organ transplantation, because so often you know, people who could revive are being called brain dead simply so they could remove their organs, kill them, and put their organs in somebody else. But in this case, it's getting into like a macabre new level of where now we are actually taking brain dead people, and instead of stealing their organs and putting them in other people, we're actually saying, hey, since this person is brain dead anyway, let's just use their body for science and let's experiment on it. And you can picture, I mean, maybe they do this all the time in China. Maybe there are all kinds of horrific things being done to people who are unfortunate enough to have accidents and have brain damage. All right, going on. This is in the medical, the journal called Nature Medicine. The team, which is from Guangzhou Medical University, said that this study proved that it would be feasible to use pig lungs for transplantation. Further studies can refine the approach to lung xenotransplantation and move closer to clinical translation. The lung was genetically modified in 6 genes to remove substances which provoke an immune response in the human body. And instead of pig genes in those locations, they inserted human genes in those locations to change the pig lungs so that it would not be rejected. There were signs the man's immune system had started ramping up against the organ, and it caused some lung damage, but it had begun to improve towards the end of the experiment. Now, what I'm wondering here, the end of the experiment, what is the end of the experiment? Did they kill the guy after 9 days? Or did he have other problems? I mean, I just, the end of the experiment. Isn't it an awful thought to be, quote unquote, brain dead, to have had an accident and to have your body just used in this way? It's awful. I think it's bad enough to be brain dead and have your body used for parts, like you're a junkyard that they can just pick through. But the notion that you would be, quote unquote, brain dead, that you would have an accident and they would just consider you a medical curiosity to experiment on and then write articles about it. Absolutely horrifying. All right. Catherine Albrecht here. If you have any comments or questions about this story, I'd love to hear from you. 877-536-1360. And I'll be right back.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
For I have chosen you, don't be afraid. For I am with you, don't be discouraged. For I am your God, I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up. I will hold you up. For I've chosen you, don't be afraid. For I'm with you, don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up.
Hey, I'm back. Catherine Albrecht here. All right, so in case you missed my earlier shows on organ transplantation, I have been, this is a topic that I've been speaking out against for, I don't know, probably 15 years now. It's been quite a while. I did a lot of shows back before my 7-year hiatus when I was on GCN on organ transplantation, and had a number of guests, including folks who ran one national organization that encouraged people to carry a card in their wallet saying that they were not an organ donor. And it really, when you first hear it, I'm sure people are listening to me going, why wouldn't I agree to that? That's like the kind thing. That's the good thing. Aren't we supposed to be good neighbors and good Christians? And there are even plenty of churches and, you know, Christians who I think don't know the details. And they say, yes, indeed, this is the ultimate form of generosity. But the truth is that it is macabre and it's dark and it's awful. The more you know about it, and I'll see if I can get Lori to post a link to some of the shows that I've done on it so you can go back and listen to more details. But the more you learn about it, the more you learn that the whole industry of taking organs from people is fraught with probably criminal activity, even, I have to say. If you are in an accident, or a family member's in an accident, and they're in the hospital, and there is a team of doctors in the emergency room trying with all their might to rescue you or your loved one, the moment they realize that it's possible that you might not make it, someone puts in a call to the organ collection team, and these group of ghouls come over to the hospital, and they wait, and they wait. And you know that they're hoping with all of their dark hearts that you won't make it, that your brain will be deprived of oxygen so that they will get the good news and come out of the room and say, I'm sorry, he or she or you or whatever didn't make it. And at that moment, the organ retrieval team goes, woohoo, we got another one. They will come in, they will wheel your living body on life support out of the room. They will take you into another surgical theater. They will call while you're alive. They'll keep you on life support, keep everything flowing, because the last thing they want is for your organs to no longer be viable if you're not oxygenated and, you know, don't have the blood circulation, all the things that keep a body healthy and keep organs healthy. So they'll keep you alive, they'll keep you intact, they'll keep you healthy. Meanwhile, they'll tell your family, oh, you know, we're so sorry that he or she didn't make it. But, you know, they can live on. You know, this doesn't have to be a tragedy for no reason. You can save a life. And they will try to get your family members, assuming you haven't already filled out a card and already agreed to this in advance yourself, but they'll try to get your family members to sign over your body for this altruistic positive purpose so you can live on and help others. Well, assuming they can get you to sign, they get your family members to sign it, they will then keep your body alive, just like on life support. They'll put you on an oxygen machine if you're not breathing. They'll, put an IV and keep fluids and nutrition and glucose going into your body. They'll put a blood pressure cuff on you. And then the organ transplantation team will go, working overtime, making phone calls and looking at the organ registry of people who want an organ. And they will find people who, have been waiting on this registry that match your blood type. And as soon as they find a match, here's what they do, right? They will contact that person. They'll say, you know, we have a heart for you. We have lungs for you. We have a kidney, a liver, whatever it might be. And then they will have that person go to the hospital. Sometimes they fly from across the country. Sometimes they're, you know, driving in. They say, can you be here tomorrow at 3 p.m. for your transplantation surgery? That person then travels to the hospital where your body is on life support. They check them in. You know, they go through the whole thing. They gown them and they meet with the anesthesiologist and they do all the stuff to prep them for surgery. And then they put them under, you know, they put them on the surgical table. They put them under. They wheel them into the surgical room. Then they take your body, which is on life support. They wheel you into the surgical room. And right there on the spot with both of you in there on life support, they cut open your chest, remove your organs. They do not give you anesthesia. Because you're brain dead, right? Except for the fact that so many people in the middle of this procedure have sat up and said, stop doing this. Like, just woken up screaming out of their minds, had bodily, you know, responses where they tried to fight with the people who were trying to cut them open, that what they do now is they give to people whose organs are being removed, they give them a paralytic so that they're incapable of moving. But they don't really address the issue of a lot of these people are actually alive and conscious and saying no to it. So they give you a paralytic so that you can't respond like that. They do not give you any anesthesia or pain medication because to do so would be to acknowledge that you might actually be feeling what's happening to you, right? So with a paralytic, you don't have to give anesthesia. Because if someone's paralyzed, doesn't matter how much pain they're in, they can't do anything about it. And so with no anesthesia, they cut your chest open, you know, take out your beating heart, just like they did in the Aztec temples. They would actually take live victims, rip open their chest, hold their beating heart while it beat in their hands as a sacrifice to their dark idols, and then sort of throw the body down the pyramid, you know, down the cliff. Have you ever seen the movie Apocalypto? It's Mel Gibson, there we go. Mel Gibson, who did The Passion of the Christ, which is just an extraordinary movie, one of my favorite films. He also did a movie on human sacrifice among the Aztec called Apocalypto. Wasn't super popular. I tried to watch part of it. It is gruesome as heck, but it gives you a really visceral sense of what those guys were doing. And it was, we talk about factory farming. This was factory sacrifice on an industrial scale. They would have hundreds of sacrifices a day. It was a whole business, as they led people up there and they had the priests. And these guys the priests would do this so many times they would get tired and they'd have shifts and the next priest would come up and do it. So that notion of removing a beating heart from a living person is not just something from, you know, ancient Mesoamerica. It's something that we're doing every single time there's an organ transplant. So they take the beating heart out. At the same time, another surgeon is removing the diseased heart from the recipient. And then right there on the spot, they take that beating heart, hopefully as soon as possible. They try to not have much of a delay because you're just right there. They just walk over across the room and then put the heart into the empty cavity in the recipient and then begin sewing it up. That's how it works. So it is not the case, and I think, people have this, I used to have this misconception that you would only take an organ from someone who was actually dead, like dead. I'd have to be a dead person. And, you know, at that point, I'm dead. Who cares what you do with my body? But the reality is you cannot take an organ from a dead person, because as soon as that heart or those tissues have been without oxygen for even a very short period of time, I mean, you know, if you don't get enough oxygen, if you asphyxiate, or if you have problems that prevent you from getting oxygen, maybe you're under the ice, maybe you're in a swimming pool drowning, you only have a couple of minutes before the lack of oxygen sets in and destroys your organs. So then they wouldn't be useful for transplanting. That's just really the truth. So yeah, they keep people alive. And in China, where this particular study happened, where they took this, this brain dead person, we don't know that this wasn't a prisoner, because in China what they do is if you get the death sentence, the death penalty is your criminal sentence, they don't take you to the electric chair or lethal injection. They don't do that. What they do in China with people who have been sentenced to death is they put them in prison. They feed them really well. They keep them really healthy. And then as soon as a wealthy person comes along and says, I need, let me look at the menu here. I need a heart. And my blood type is, B positive, whatever it might be. And at that point, they then go through the catalog and they've already noted the blood types and the ages and the relative, healthiness of these criminals, and not even criminals. Some of them are just political, Falun Gong and people the Chinese government doesn't like. But they go through all the prisoners and they find a match. And once they find a match, then they come in and they, take the jangling keys, open your jail cell, and says, you know, your day has come. You're about to be executed. And then what do? They take you to the hospital. They hook you up to, you know, put you in a gown, hook you up to blood pressure cuff and an IV machine, and wheel you into the surgical theater. And, that is how you lose your life in China. So it's horrible. With that said, there is an article. This is, I was going to talk about this on a Good News Friday show, but I haven't gotten to it. Hang on. Here's my Good News Friday story. I'd have sort of two. So the New York Times ran an article that finally, for the first time, said a lot of the stuff that many of us have been saying for a long time. This was on July 20th, 2025. So just about a month ago, the New York Times ran an article called, the title was "A Push for More Organ Transplants is Putting Donors at Risk." And for the first time, the mainstream media actually talked about some of the stuff that I've been talking about. The fact that, many people have recovered from their supposed brain damage and were able to report that they heard their family members refusing organ transplantation and have been able to turn to them and said, "I heard every word, but I couldn't move. Thank you so much for not letting them do that to me." There's lots and lots of stories like that. People who have fully recovered and gone on to live perfectly good lives, but the ghouls wanted to take their organs and they'd be dead now if their family members had said yes. All right, tell you about the story in a minute.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for His help. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for His help. He'll be gracious if you ask for help. He will surely respond to the sound of your cries. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for His help.
Yeah, and I'm back. Catherine Albrecht here. We need the Lord's help. All right, so this article turned out to be, it really did start a firestorm. There are nonprofit organizations that are just these life-saving, wonderful, just paragons of goodness, and all they want is for everyone to be well and healthy, cough, cough. There are the organizations responsible for procuring organs, and it turns out that they've been doing a lot of unethical things. Big surprise. Let me just read you the highlights or the lowlights from what the New York Times discovered. People across the U.S. enduring rushed or premature attempts to remove their organs. Some were gasping, crying, and showing other signs of life. All right. And then it starts off with a story about one woman. In her case, Last spring, in a small Alabama hospital, a team of transplant surgeons prepared to cut into a woman named Misty Hawkins, 42-year-old Misty Hawkins. The clock was ticking. Her organs wouldn't be usable for much longer. Okay, now that's a key. How long are your organs usable for? All right. Days earlier, she had been a vibrant 42-year-old with a playful sense of humor, but after she choked while eating, she fell into a coma. Her mother decided to take her off life support and donate her organs. She was removed from a ventilator, and after 103 minutes, she was declared dead. Here's the problem. She wasn't dead. A surgeon, they brought the ghouls in. The ghouls are always waiting. They came in, and a transplant surgeon made an incision in her chest and sawed through her breastbone, and then discovered that her heart was beating and she was breathing. They were slicing into her while she was alive. Now, this article is a little odd because that's generally the case. When you remove somebody's heart, it is beating. In this particular case, I think it gets into this thing about circulatory death, which I'm going to get to in a minute. But that left me a little puzzled because you wouldn't want to saw into someone's chest and remove a heart that wasn't beating. But I think most people don't know this. Maybe even the author of this article didn't realize. I think most people, when they sign an organ donation card, have no idea that their beating heart would be removed from their body. Most people expect them to be dead. But indeed, that is pretty much always the case when you remove a heart. But now here's another one. In New Mexico, a woman was subjected to days of preparation for donation, even after her family said she was regaining consciousness, which she eventually did. Right? Another case in Florida, a man cried out and bit on his breathing tube. Nevertheless, despite his crying out and trying to get them to stop, they removed his life support and took his organs. In West Virginia, doctors were appalled when coordinators asked a paralyzed man coming off of sedatives directly if they could remove his organs. They didn't even, he was capable of responding to them. He could actually answer their question. All right. Stories like this have emerged as the transplant system has turned to a new type of organ removal. Now, here's the issue. So Christopher Bernard, I'm writing about him in my book on the history of technology, the evil people who have implemented certain technologies. Christopher Bernard was the South African doctor who pioneered the very first heart transplant. And he was just a despicably wicked, evil, immoral, awful human being. In order to get the organs that he wanted for what he was doing, they had to invent a new definition of death. Because in the past, you've all seen they hold the mirror up and see if you're breathing, right? They check your pulse, right? There's certain ways that humanity has always used to check to see if a person was alive or not. The problem is if you wait until the pulse stops and if you wait until the person's not breathing, well, then their organs are of no use to you because they must remain oxygenated. So they had a little bit of a dilemma. How do we get people? How do we get the legal right to operate on living people so that we can remove these organs when they're still useful to us, when the person's still alive? And that is how they came up with this definition of brain death. It was new. Nobody ever talked about anything like that before. And it was invented solely for the purposes of organ transplantation. So they invented a whole new category of death. And for decades now, they have had these measures that are very subjective and turn out to not really even be accurate, as I mentioned before, with all the people who said, boy, mom, gee, husband, gosh, kids, thank you so much that I heard the doctors in there saying to remove my organs and that I was dead, but I was not dead. And I was screaming in my head, don't do it. Thank you so much for not doing it. Here I am. I'm alive. I'm well. I'm checking out of the hospital. I'm walking out here on my own power. And thank you so much for not letting me die. So this concept of brain death is not by any means a universally agreed upon standard. And it's not even a real thing. I mean, maybe if the brain was entirely removed or completely turned to smush, but if that happened, then it couldn't keep your heart and lungs alive because it's your brain's autonomic nervous system that keeps your organs, your circulatory system and all of those other things working anyway. So now this is where it gets worse. So they've got these lists of people who need organ transplants and all of this hand-wringing because there's just not enough organs for them. This is why they do these big pushes at the DMV or the Secretary of State when you register, you know, to get your driver's license or register your car. They're trying to get you to sign up for the organ donation registry. And there has been a big public relations campaign to try to make it seem like it is the kindest, most wonderful, you know, altruistic Christian thing you can do to give your organs after death without any of these details. But nevertheless, despite that, they still don't have enough organs. Part of the reason is that if someone is in the kind of accident that makes you know, makes them brain dead, car accident, motorcycle accident, chances are they're dead. So it's not like you know, the paramedics can arrive on the scene of a horrible accident and find people whose hearts are beating but whose brains have stopped. That's pretty rare. Typically you get there and either, you know, they're in a position to be, you know, to recover and be raced to the emergency room and get, you know, whatever help they need. And then they come back to life, or they're just dead body and, brain are both not functioning. So there's not enough to go around. So here's what they came up with is their new solution. And it's so macabre and so horrifying. It is called donation after circulatory death. Right, so this is no longer, we have a new definition. It's no longer brain death. Now it's brain death. You can grab those guys' organs, but you can also have this new thing, donation after circulatory death, and it is so popular that it accounts for a third of all donations. So they've increased the number of quote unquote donations by 50% by adding this new category. They still don't have enough, but 20,000 people. Last year, I think it was 60,000 total who were dismantled and killed in this way. 20,000 of them were this new category of donation after circulatory death. All right, let me read on. Most donated organs in the U.S. come from people who are brain dead, and that is considered an irreversible state. They are kept on machines only to maintain their organs. Circulatory death donation is different. These patients are on life support, often in a coma. They're alive and have brain activity, but doctors have determined that they're near death and will not recover. If relatives agree to donations, doctors withdraw life support and wait for the patient's heart to stop. If this happens within an hour or two, the organs are considered viable and the surgeons go in. So, yeah. So you could have a perfectly functional brain, and if they decide that you're you know, not going to make it, maybe you even have brain activity, but they don't consider it consciousness, you can't speak to them, then they can take you off life support. And if your heart stops, then they can, you know, it's a free-for-all. They can cut you open. It says here, the Times found that some organ procurement organizations, those are the nonprofits in every state with a federal contract to coordinate these transplants, are aggressively pursuing circulatory death donors and pushing families and doctors towards doing this surgery. Hospitals are responsible for patients up to the moment of death, but some of them are allowing these procurement organizations to influence treatment decisions. The Times, New York Times, interviewed 55 medical workers in 19 states. Or they interviewed lots of them, and 55 said they had witnessed at least one disturbing case of donation after circulatory death, which they thought was inappropriate and the person wasn't actually dead. Workers in several states said they had seen coordinators pursuing or persuading hospital clinicians to administer morphine, propofol, and other drugs to hasten the death of potential donors. All right, now there has been a federal investigation on this. It was prompted by the case of a Kentucky man whose organs were being pursued even as he shook his head and drew up his knees to his chest. And that was enough to prompt a federal investigation. They found that in Kentucky, The state had, or the procurement organization had ignored signs of life in 73 potential donors. Scary as heck. They're killing people.
Okay, I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
Okay, well, you wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
I'm going to jump right in here because I want to conclude with the good news. So the news today, they put pig lungs into someone in China who may or may not have been a prisoner. I don't know. They didn't tell us that part. So that part is just disgusting. But let me give you the good news here. The fallout from that New York Times article, this was really the first time that mainstream media had talked about these stories in, kind of a headline type way on July 20th. In this article, a push for more organ transplants is putting donors at risk. The response to that was that huge, massive numbers of people withdrew themselves from the organ donation list. And by the way, if you're on a list or if you have, I know in California, a little pink dot that we put on our driver's licenses. And I remember when I stuck mine on there very proudly saying, I am a good person. I'm going to donate my organs if I die. If you have made that decision, you probably should undo that decision. You can join the ranks of the large number of people who have withdrawn their consent after this New York Times article. Let me read you the good news. This was going to be a Good News Friday story, but I think it's a good way to conclude today's program about all of this dark stuff with some good news. Mass exodus from organ donor registries following media coverage. Now, this was August 7th, so that's 14 days, two weeks after the article first came out. Thousands of Americans have removed themselves from organ donor registries following quote, irresponsible reporting, end quote, led by the New York Times, official said. Okay, now, I love the story. Guess who complained? Who complained was the Association of Organ Procurement Organizations. That's a trade group that represents 46 different federally designated nonprofit entities that make, they're the ghouls. They are the ones who coordinate the donors with the recipients. They're the ones who send the surgeons in. They're the ones who make all of this happen. Well, they were really upset, and they accused the New York Times of a lack of balance and accuracy in its recent coverage of the problems in the sprawling transplant system. All right, now, this is what I love. You guys heard of the Streisand effect? Barbara Streisand, who has a property on along the Pacific coast in Malibu, I believe, found that some very remote, obscure, some kind of mapping publication had had posted a picture of her property. And she complained and made a big deal about it. And as a result, the very few people who would have seen this sort of obscure, mapping program that was like a professional organization or something, now the entire world was looking at the pictures because she brought it up. She's the one who brought it to everyone's attention. And now, whereas she didn't want anyone seeing her property, now she had everyone seeing her property. So that phenomenon is known as the Streisand effect for exactly that reason. And here, the Association of Organ Procurement Organizations, I think, are the latest victims, big time, of the Streisand effect. They were upset because this New York Times article came out. People read it. People went, yikes. People removed themselves from the organ donor registry. And had they just left well enough alone, it would have kind of probably quietly faded into the background. But instead, they sent a letter to the New York Times, to the editors, and made a huge deal about it and talked about how devastating it had been for them to have all of these people removed from the registry. Now, no one would have known that anyone was removed from the registry if they hadn't sent the letter. I'm sure it really backfired, and I'm sure somebody probably lost their job over this one. But here you go. They cited two articles from July 20th, including "A Push for More Organ Transplants is Putting Donors at Risk," in which reporters Brian Rosenthal and Julie Tate detailed rushed or premature attempts to retrieve organs from patients who were in some cases still showing signs of life. Right? They go on in their letter. I love this. This is in Newsweek, by the way, but I think a lot of media cover this. Their letter, this is the procurement guys, they said, "The patient safety incident cited in the New York Times article are very concerning," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right. Then they went on. I love this. And they said in their letter, "These stories have directly led to the biggest increase in people removing themselves from donor registries ever recorded, putting patients waiting for transplants at greater risk. Much of that context is not reflected in the published stories or podcast, despite our efforts to support informed, balanced coverage." They claim that both articles had serious factual inaccuracies. And then they went on and talked about the thousands, "thousands of Americans have removed themselves from U.S. organ donor registries as a direct result of the articles. The massive spike does not include removals from state registries or people who declined to be organ donors at hospitals, but the, quote, chilling effect of the Times coverage," that's what they wrote in their letter, "prompted more than 2,400 people to remove themselves from California's registry alone." 2,400 people. As well as 960 in Florida and more than 600 in Colorado. Now, we would not know these numbers. We would not know the effectiveness of the Times coverage had these guys not just gone, boo-hoo, poor us, look what's happened as a result of this article. I say, hooray. What a wonderful thing. And this was only within the first 2 weeks. I'm sure that this article, that they were directly responsible for having this article published, probably resulted in many, many more people withdrawing. But now we're not going to hear about it because they probably learned their lesson. They won't tell us again. This is the largest spike in recorded registry removals ever recorded in the history of organ donations in the U.S., the AOP letter reads. "The New York Times coverage, coupled with a wave of secondary stories by other outlets and widespread sensationalistic commentary and online reactions, has initiated a wave of panic and fear across the U.S. And I say, hallelujah, it's about time. So who knows now? Nobody, to my knowledge, since this article came out, since they wrote their letter, has actually told us how many people have removed themselves from the registries. But consider this your notice, your wake-up call. Get yourself off the registry. If you have friends or family members, I'm going to post a link to the original New York Times article, also this article. And I'll post it at Catherine-Albrecht.com in the archives. I'll have Lori put it up there. And so if you click on radio show and navigate to today's program, today is August 25th, 2025, obviously, August 25th. If you navigate to that, find the article, share it with everybody you know, and tell them what I've explained today. Tell them, get off the registry. Don't do it. Tell your kids, tell your parents, tell your neighbors, tell everybody you know that you're in a position to give advice to, that they do not want to be on this organ donor registry. It's a horrifying disaster what's going on out there. And they will be in really, really good company of multiple thousands, probably tens of thousands of people who have removed themselves from these registries. And yay. And also, the other thing you want to do is let your family members know that if you are ever in a situation where you are considered brain dead or you're fighting for your life, that they are not to give permission for your organs to be removed from your body. So straight up front, right away, tell them that. The other thing, as I was picturing these ghouls who show up and are celebrating when the doctors come out and say you're dead, well, those are the same people who, when the doctors come out and say, he made it, he's come back to life, he's showing signs of life, they all go, oh, man, we came all the way over here for nothing. So just the mindset of this whole industry that doesn't think about the person who is the victim of the accident or the person whose life needs to be saved. They simply view them as an opportunity to make money because there's big, big bucks in this organ transplantation thieving thing that goes on. And instead of talking about, in response to this article, well, what an awful thing that we are harming people, instead they're like, how awful it is that this will harm the people who need the organs. You know, and so their sole focus seems to be on the recipients of the organs. But in reality, this is not a focus on really anybody. It's not a focus on anyone's well-being. It's just money. And if your job is based on getting approval to do this, then the more approval you get, the more people that die, the more people you're able to do this to, regardless of how unethical it is, the more conditions you can put in there to make it easier for you to declare that a person can be operated on, the better for you. So these are not people, I mean, to the extent that they are doctors, I think they shouldn't be, because the Hippocratic Oath says to do no harm. You're really not supposed to be wishing for the death of anybody. So, get yourself off the registry. Let your family members know. If you go into the hospital for surgery, you will have an advance directive form oftentimes given to you. You want to make sure that you have one of those filled out in advance anyway, and it needs to specifically say you can't have my organs. And for those of you listening in other countries, I have somewhat distressing news for you. Here in the U.S., it's opt-in. So you are assumed to, they can't take your organs unless someone gives approval. Either you do it through your driver's license or your you do it through a card you carry in your wallet. Your family members do it for you. And if no one gives approval, it is just assumed that the default state is no, they can't have your organs. But in some countries around the world, particularly across Europe, they've done it the other way around. You are presumed to be an organ donor automatically without any effort on your part. They don't need anyone's permission, not yours or your family's, unless you make a point of specifically opting out. So if you're listening in another country, you may want to look up the regulations in your country. And in many of them, there is an online registry where you can go in and add your name and say, no, you can't have my organs. By the way, in those countries, the numbers of people who are doing that are in the single digits. So they have a much easier time procuring organs for translation or for transplanting into people in those countries. Yuck. So, good. It's nice to have good news, isn't it? It's nice to watch these people get a poke in the eye, really. They've been getting away with this for far too long. And don't you want to play your tiny violin for them? Oh, people didn't. You hurt us. They're removing themselves. I'm like, tiny violin. Yes, yes. See you tomorrow.